You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Worth Harley-Davidson North, I-29 in Tiffany Springs. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
Coach, how much did you know about Jordan's condition going into the game? What did he look like early, and describe the effort that he put forth with the illness that he had?
First of all, I didn't know he was sick, and I thought he played a great game. Did everybody else know he was sick? I guess I was the last one to know.
Hey, Coach.
This is actually the score? Is this the final?
And now, ready to pour one out for the late Jerry Sloan, Soren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you for joining us here on a Friday, the Friday before Memorial Day weekend. Three-day weekend, Kansas City, you've earned it. I hope you're already done doing whatever it is you had to do today, be it work, errands, what have you. I know we got some people whose weekends are not Saturday and Sunday. So if today was your day off, I hope you have gotten everything done you need to do and you are planning a great Memorial Day weekend. We will do our best to send you out on a high note with the program here today. A lot to get to. We're going to check in with Jesse Newell here later this hour, get the latest on the David Beatty v. Kansas lawsuit and the what will ultimately end up being Kansas v. NCAA lawsuit. So we'll check in with Jesse Newell, who's been covering that for the Kansas City Star. Danny Unleashed at 3. A wide variety of topics always at our disposal with Danny Klingscale. I do want to talk about MLB versus MLBPA, what he thinks about how things are progressing. We'll get his thoughts on that, maybe his thoughts on the Last Dance. What was his? We just heard Jerry Sloan, who was one of my favorites. But Jerry Sloan, head coach of the Utah Jazz during the Last Dance years and for a long time. For a long time, he was the longest tenured coach. And a fun guy, as you heard there, had a sense of humor. But anyway, we'll talk to Danny Klingscale, brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing. By the way, it's been raining and raining hard at times today. If your roof is not up to snuff, go to EastonRoofing.com. Easton Roofing, integrity matters. They're the folks that fixed my roof, and I feel very comfortable when it rains. Let it rain, let it rain, let it rain. I know because I had the inspection and the estimate right now. Free inspection, free estimate from Easton Roofing, of course, proud sponsor of Danny Unleashed. Two-minute drill coming your way at 4 o'clock, brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. Doors are open at Twin Peaks. Remember, there is a much more limited seating capacity with the new rules, so do have some patience. They will seat you as fast as they can. Eats, drinks, scenic views, that is Twin Peaks, and of course, Twin Peaks to go curbside. Two-minute drill coming your way at 4 o'clock. Tom Fornelli from CBS Sports will be with us. We're going to talk more about this next week when we've got some more time. But the I love this. They do it every year. CBS ranks the Power 5 coaches for college football. And always one of my more entertaining reads. And I have such great respect for anybody that'll put it together. All the guys voted their list, and then they did a composite of it. So basically like a top 25 would work, multiple people's thoughts, and then they average it up and you get who the top coaches are. And what's so stunning to me is neither Dabo Sweeney nor Nick Saban anywhere near the top. I mean, 51 for Dabo.
Yeah, Saban 44.
Yeah.
Eli Drinkwitz, number 7. That's
number
nice,
7.
Nice to debut. It was MIC, baby.
Yeah, great start for Drinkwitz. Yeah, we'll let you know. We'll talk about how the local guys fared. Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. In the 5 o'clock hour, we'll get you what you need to know. And Adam Teicher with us in the 5 o'clock hour. You know, he covers the Chiefs. I don't know if you heard.
I've heard of him.
It's been in the paper and on the websites and things like that. So you should have heard from him. But we'll hear more on the Kansas City Chiefs with Adam Teicher, the senior, I believe he is now referred to as the senior Chiefs media member. And he is the head
senior
of
Chiefs
the,
correspondent.
Yeah, he is the head of the Pro Football Writers Association, the local chapter. He's the president. So he's got that going for him.
to get the first
titles.
He doesn't quite get the first question, so he's not quite Helen Thomas, but he's getting there.
He often does get the first question.
You know, that's in fact he did
does.
Today.
Yes, in fact they go to him. And by the way, anybody who's on those Zoom press conferences when Adam is given the first question and you're upset, it's time for you to look in the mirror.
Yeah,
he's earned it. He's earned it. That's
no
that's
doubt
not
about
one,
that, man.
Yeah, that's not one you get upset about. Adam Teicher has earned it. So I'm always happy because it gives me a chance to kind of settle in. You know, if you're only going to get one question, and I actually got two in with Andy Reid today. He had a little more time, I think, than maybe they thought initially. And but, you know, we're not going to get as many. Sometimes you can get more than that when you get them in person. I do kind of like, you know, that Adam goes first. Number one, he's always asked a pertinent and relevant question. But it also gives you a chance to settle in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, I'm writing down who asked it, the time they asked it, and then what the gist of it is so I can send back to Curtis, because there's a limited number of us that can be on it. Me and Todd are usually on those. And so I got to send it back to Curtis. Hey, here's what I'm thinking. So it's always nice to get settled in, get my clock, my stopwatch going on my Sprint phone. And, you know, I like that. I don't have the pressure of having to be ready to go right out of the gates. Yeah, that's all on Adam. That's what the senior correspondent does. So, you know, and I appreciate that. So we'll talk to Adam Teicher coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. Let's do here a little bit of Andy Reid as they're making their way through the virtual OTAs and minicamps. I haven't got to minicamp yet, but it will be virtual as well, as it certainly seems. First thing is Andy Reid did open up with a couple of statements. One of them, and you could see, he was still in his basement. He's got that interesting ceiling. I think he went more of a ceiling shot. I think he realized that people are like, you know, zooming in on, you know, like in his office, like what's he got here? What's this here? What's that? So he went where you're getting just his face in the ceiling today. Did you notice that?
I did. Little lower angle, high up, and
yeah, which, you know, is
he got his entire head in the Zoom conference, which, from what I've heard from friends, is often not the case. Maybe just the top of someone's head is occasionally seen.
Yeah. Boy, I may or may not have been on a Zoom where, you know, there
someone
were certainly no professional. Nope,
sinking
no professional.
Lower and lower in their chair.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Curtis
no professional cameraman.
May have gotten play-by-play of it.
that was fun.
it was like, is that how it works? Because everyone in the media, I guess I'm not watching the normal, you know, Zoom press conferences. I got a lot of friends in the media. So, like, I always kind of try to center it up, right? Proper amount of headroom. You know, even when I just talk to friends, I try to get it. I've got several baseball prospecti, or they be prospectuses.
Prospectum.
No. Prospecti. I'm going to call them prospecti. Several baseball prospecti that I use to set the computer on, right, plus old notebooks, mm-hmm. To create a stand. So I'm getting – I try to get, like, you know, I mean, I'm certainly no TV camera, Don Proctor, the great Don Proctor. I can't do what he does. But I try to emulate what I've seen the greats do. But I do notice that just like for some folks, the idea of the Zoom call, even being in the shot, they don't think is a mandatory deal.
There is actually, and I will tweet this out in a bit, there's a new site on Twitter, an account on Twitter that I was alerted to by our friend Steve Stewart, the Royals, called Room Rater, R-A-T-E-R. Well, all the guy does is just go on, look at pictures from Zoom conferences and rate, like critique the person's setup. It's quite funny.
Oh, my God. It's on Twitter?
Yes, it's called Room Rater, R-A-T-E-R.
Twitter.
It's got like 300,000 followers.
Raider.
There's one guy that's like, fruit. That's good. Maybe put it in a bowl. And for balance sake, move the flowers to where the soap is. The guy was clearly like taking the shot in his kitchen. Just a handful of these are quite fun.
Is the Twitter handle Rate My Skype Room?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
There's some good stuff on there.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. Let's take a look at this. Good times.
I generally try to put mine on when we have them.
Let me
like
give that
in
a follow.
Long hallway, so that I have like I'm going to do the Kubrick thing. So I usually have some kind of perspective. So I usually have a long hallway behind me. No. I don't remember.
Just for anyone, if you haven't seen it, the piano and windows are magnifique. The natural light and classic furniture complete this room. Add a spot of color. Nice.
Nick Saban one. Roll Tide. Nice table. I hope that's not ivory. Folding chairs? 7 of 10.
That's pretty good. I like this one. One of the better congressional setups. Speak softly and use a big plant.
Yeah, you'll enjoy that, folks, if you've seen enough of these things. And almost everyone who's working has been on a Zoom conference at some point. So
yeah,
it's very broadly applicable to whatever you're doing in your daily life.
Yeah, okay. All right, I like that. I'm going to have to take a look at that. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. Because I might have to submit something.
Yes.
You saw.
That may happen.
So, like, if two people are going to get on a Zoom call, you know, what you, and you decide, we're just not sitting close enough to make this, like, one shot happen here.
Yeah.
Like, do you put one on camera and leave one off camera, or do you go with, like, an eighth of each person's face?
I would think you would pick one or
basically
the other.
Zeroing in on the emptiness of the couch and focusing on the space that you feel necessary to leave between you.
One person's left eye, the other person's right eye.
Maybe it was a statement about their marriage.
And a huge couch in between. While I was getting those play-by-plays last night, I was sitting in a place and saw a guy 10 feet from me do two things that I didn't think were possible within 30 seconds. He banged into a concrete post with the front of his beamer, then proceeded to get out of his car and set off his own alarm. I thought, man, you are a train wreck, sir. How can that happen that quickly? I just wanted to share that because I sat in disbelief, jaws agape. Wow, excellent entrance, sir.
That's strong. That is strong.
Boom.
There's a lot of those things that I had one of those going in my neighborhoods as well, and I was like, you know, just sitting outside, you know, like, you know, I hear your car alarm, like. I'm further than you are.
I can hear it through a computer. How can you not hear this?
Wow, man. Anyway, all right, let's get going. Andy Reid. Enough about our fun.
Let's talk about Andy Reid.
Let's get serious.
Let's get serious here on football. Come on now.
Let's focus on things.
Right? Time's mine.
First, I'll let you hear, and then we'll get to a question I asked Andy Reid that's kind of a follow-up to this. Reid asked about the challenges of having these OTAs virtually.
Yeah, the coaches have used, because we can't go on the field, the coaches have used unique tools with them as far as maybe calling on a player to do an install, you know, to install a play or whatever it might be. So, for us, it's given all our coaches an opportunity to do installs as we go. Again, just to keep the focus of the player and to keep it fresh. Other than that, it's been great. I just phase three for us, we're kind of keeping the same schedule that we had before for the most part to this point. So we're going from two installs to three installs. And then we work from there. But again, we're still not able to be on the field.
I'm going to call an audible. Give me 7, Jed. Cause I think there's actually something in here that I like that'll be good before we get to, the next one. So let's go to number 7 here. Reid was asked, if he handled install meetings differently between rookies and veterans.
Yeah. So we've tried to keep this time consistent. They've got, a two-hour period with the veterans. That's what you have. With the rookies, you have a five-hour period that you can work with them. So we try to work in a couple extra hours for the rookies to meet. We were originally doing it with Dave Tobe and the coaches. So Dave got a little bit of special teams introduction to the guys, and then the coaches had them for a nice block of 2 hours. But anyways, you've got that extra time, and our coaches use that. So they get on with them, and in some cases, just one or two guys in a room. So they get, or whatever we're calling these rooms, but we're you know, doing it this way here. So virtually, but it's they get that time, and right now for those kids, time's important, and your attitude and approach to that is important. Are you going to stay awake looking at this screen? Are you going to stay awake? We make them keep their face showing and not click off the camera, so we see them where that's a little bit of interaction there. One of the things we always teach the guys is when the coach is talking, try to make eye contact with them if you're not writing something down, so that you stay focused on it. And whether it's on the field or in a meeting, eyes up and on the person that's speaking. So these guys are doing that. We've had 100% participation, and they're cranking. I mean, they're going, and I've been very happy with that, their approach to it. So far, so good.
What I love there is it's no different than like your kids at school, right? Doing the Zoom school. Like, no, you can't click your video off.
I just started laughing at that.
Right? Isn't that the best?
Yes.
I mean,
stay awake, stay on camera.
Yeah. Like, you know, I was trying to keep from like smiling and laughing when he was saying that, but I was like, this is really pretty funny. I'm sorry, but it is.
Billy, it, wake up.
Yeah, like that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
So,
well, remember in the was it the HBO, the series that you do with every team every year, the one that was it Tank Tyler kept falling asleep in meetings?
Yeah.
You mentioned Tank Tyler.
Hard Knocks.
Tank Tyler on a Zoom conference?
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what we're talking about here. Yeah, it's exactly what we're talking about here. And I think, you know, I find it fascinating that here it is, a guy who's now absolutely going to the Hall of Fame. He's the Super Bowl winning coach. And he's having to tell the guys, don't fall asleep. Keep your video on. But, you know, like for some people, that would be like, wait a minute, I'm 60 years old and this is what I got to deal with.
Yeah.
And for Andy Reid, it's like, no, I understand. We start at basics. Number one, pay the blank attention. Right? That's like, it literally, it starts, it's like, it's no different. Any manager out there, you think life is different in the NFL because it's the National Football League and it's a multi-billion-dollar industry, and we all just can't wait to revel in the passion and excitement and pageantry of the National Football League. So, man, when Andy Reid conducts business, it must just be like one of the best things ever. Wouldn't it be great to have a captive audience like an NFL coach where they're hanging on every word? Okay, first rule, don't fall asleep. Number two, I got to see you at all times. Number three, make eye contact. Look at me. At least act like you're paying attention.
You know,
that's
you're
literally where it
down.
Begins.
Yeah. Yes.
He's the defending champion. And he's got to start with eyes up, pay attention.
Yeah, and these aren't eighth graders. They're guys in their early 20s who have, you know, been playing football for quite a while at an extremely high level. Hey, wake up. Look at me. Hello, McFly. Hey.
I love that. I was like, that is fantastic. It's no different than when I hear my fourth grade daughter's class, you know, and like, hey, so-and-so, hey, where's so-and-so? Anybody know where so-and-so is? Like, you know, for crying out loud. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. All right, so then I asked the question about, like, you know, basically how long can this go on? Can you continuing, you know, at some point, I think the term I used was, does rubber have to meet the road? Do you have to get the pads on and pop the pads? You know, I also asked him, by the way, what he thought of Aaron Donald's comments yesterday, where Aaron Donald's one of those that, like, clearly it hasn't sunk in that this may be a reality. Aaron Donald said yesterday, like, hey, well, we can't play in front of fans.
Listen, I mean, we probably could do anything. I mean, and still put out a good product. I mean, that That's how our mindset is as players and coaches. However, you sure would like to have the opportunity to get back on the field and do it. I think it'd make for a better game. As far as the fans go, you know, I understand what Aaron's saying. It just doesn't make sense. I mean, it doesn't feel like it makes sense to be without fans, but it's also part of what we would all have to deal with. If that's the situation that it comes to, my hope is that we can get everybody back out there, and we can have a stadium full of people, and we can go, and everybody can stay safe. And that's probably the most important thing. Well, it is the most important thing as we go forward. So, and I'd say that same thing for your teams, all the teams around the world that are playing these different sports and are getting together now. I know safety ends up being the thing that's talked about the most, and that we make sure that we're doing that with our players.
I thought that was, you know, and listen, the way I did a bad job because I tried to get two questions in for the price of one when I was asking him that, so it made for a clumsy throw on it, so I apologize on that. But, you know, he didn't want to run down Aaron Donald. He mentioned, you know, Aaron Donald and how he – you know, had said everything. But I asked him basically, you know, as part of it in his answer to that was, I said, well, listen, is there a time that you've got to get the pads on? Or can you do this all year? Like, can you just do everything virtually, have every meeting, every practice, and the only time anybody ever comes in contact with each other is on game day?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't that, like, literally where it may need to go? Well, it'll make for sloppy football. It sure will, but I'll take sloppy football over no football.
Yeah, and both teams, I mean, if you wonder, is it like a chess thing where two guys who aren't very good can actually play an entertaining game of chess? I mean, I don't know how – I think it would be less sloppy than people might believe. I think sometimes sloppy comes from if one team isn't prepared, another team is. If both teams are kind of unprepared, maybe it isn't terribly exciting football, but I don't know if it's going to be fumbles and completely blown assignments because the other team might not be on the same plane as – or might be on the exact same plane they are, but – at least for this year, yeah. I mean, I think it's absolutely conceivable that they may have to do that for at least one season. I mean, we're still a few months away from maybe or a month or so away from having to decide that. But I think it's absolutely a possibility, and I feel pretty good about the organizational structure that he's put together. That they'd be pretty damn good at it, and he seems to feel pretty good about. If they had to do that, and how well they would do it. That was his first part of the answer. We could pretty much do anything.
I did like that part. His first part of the answer is basically like, it doesn't matter what mountain is out there, we're going to scale it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's just, look, we'll hear it just as we heard Notre Dame was saying, well, you know, we're not playing without fans. Really? Okay. And now, you know, that seemed to be the pervasive thought in college football until they started realizing, oh, wait a minute. We want them back in June, and we haven't even gotten the green light for that. And not far behind that, you know, is when we start practicing or we start doing conditioning stuff. Like, oh, wait a minute, this is real. We may not be able to get back. It's not going to be the way it's always been. And all of a sudden, everybody backpedals. You will hear Aaron Donald backpedal over the coming weeks. I guarantee it. I absolutely guarantee it. There's so much money on the line for Aaron Donald if he wants to play football and wants to get paid for playing football. How it's going to have to happen is in almost all likelihood. And certainly for the guy playing in Los Angeles where the governor has already said, I can't see us opening up stadiums to tens of thousands of people this fall. He didn't say they won't play, but he said we're not going to see a packed stadium. So if Aaron Donald wants to get a check, and I think this just speaks to what we talked about last week where, you know, Travis Kelce and Anthony Hitchens, when I'm asking them questions about, like, hey, have you and the NFLPA talked about what the financial ramifications are going to be? Like, not even really grasping that I'm saying, like, money is going to be lost by the NFL.
Yeah.
There's no way that revenue is going to be the same or up. It's going to be down. Because even if the all clear is given for everybody to go to stadiums, I guarantee you there are going to be people that don't feel safe. You're not going to sell out an NFL stadium.
If the high price of NFL games is a topic, and it has been over the years, then how could you think that the removal of that revenue wouldn't have a huge impact?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, for me, I think Andy Reid is much further down the road. which you would expect, and which every coach should be, over a player. But he's a long way down the road from Aaron Donald. Number one, he showed deference to him, shows the wiseness, like, I'm not going to throw Aaron Donald under the bus. But he's like, hey, look, that's what we all want. That's ideal. But safety is, you know, is one of the first things. He said, well, it is the first thing. You know, he recognized, you know, usually you don't want to make these definitive statements. But on safety, yes, it's number one. It's the first thing. And, you know, he understands. I think Andy Reid very much understands that the likelihood that if they're going to play, that they're probably playing in front of no fans. You know, mm-hmm. And to me, I'll come back again. I think that one of the things that ought to be discussed, and if I'd had more questions, I would have run it by Andy Reid, who's on the competition committee. And maybe it's not even possible in the NFL just because of all the things that are there or the collective bargaining agreement that says the players get so much time. But I would genuinely be looking about starting training camp right now. And let's bump that season up. And if you could get everybody on board, I think the colleges are being smart. Well, we mentioned Notre Dame and Syracuse, and I'm sure many others have as well, but those are the two that I saw stories written about. Either bumping up their semester and starting it early, Notre Dame, eliminating their fall break, and getting out at Thanksgiving. That's it, done for the semester. And letting everybody go home, and probably then starting the spring semester late as well, I'm going to assume. We might get a March start and go into June, you know, through June next year. But I think the cold and flu season is going to be hunker down. And I think people need to start getting ready for that. Businesses need to start getting ready for that. You know, don't throw away your drive-throughs and your curbsides and you're doing everything by you know, through the mail and your work at home setup. Because in all likelihood, unless we get, and I'm still very optimistic that the human ingenuity will come up with it, but if we don't, we're going to be locking down again or staying at home again, whatever term you want to use, this winter.
Yeah, it was enough of a topic of, you know, pushing the season back that much of the discussion going into the scheduling thing was, are they going to put non-conference games or inter-conference games at the beginning so that they have to cancel those, they can start the season later? The fact that it's now looking like the complete opposite,
yes,
would be a more preferable scenario kind of speaks to the unknown origin of this, but and how little we still have our hands around what this is and where it's, or at least where it's going. So yeah, I think it's difficult to get this thing turned around to where you can. You know, there's so many things that have delayed us to now say, well, let's get it going quicker. It's something difficult to do, but it is something I think they have to consider.
Yeah, I definitely do. And listen, if it is two more winters before a safe, you know, a vaccine is around, then they better look at it next year. Right? Like, learn as we go. Some people say, hey, we're making progress. We can have something by the end of the year. Great. I hope that's the case. I hope that's the case, and maybe we have no fans all the way till December or even like playoff time. Hey, everyone's been fully vaccinated, and now we had 16 weeks of no fans, but playoffs, come one, come all, we are open for business. And we have a packed house, and the Chiefs win a Super Bowl in front of a packed house again. Mm-hmm. That would be fantastic, but there's also the distinct possibility that it's not ready, and we have to live with the virus as Bob Bowlesby, as we played you Bob Bowlesby, the commissioner of the Big 12, saying earlier this week, we have to learn to live with the virus. And living with the virus may be playing our sports between March or even April and September. All of them have to find their place between April and September, and we all get a lot of Netflix in from, you know, October through March. That may just be what reality is for a couple of years, and they need to be ready for it. Let's take a break. We'll hear more from Andy Reid. Open up the phone lines as always. Always enjoy your phone calls, your thoughts, your opinions, your questions. 913-810-810, Kansas, K-State, Missouri. Chiefs, Royals, Sporting, always a topic here in the program. 913-3810-810, Friday edition, going into Memorial Day weekend. We are excited about that. We're excited about bringing you the program today.
The Program with Soren Petro.
Curtis.
Yeah, sounds good.
Thank you.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You listen to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll talk to Jesse Newell coming up here in a minute. I want you to hear one more from Andy Reid. We'll hear more from Andy Reid on the Rooney Rule coming up a little bit later on in the program. But Home field advantage, right? We saw the Bundesliga playing without fans. Reed was asked how much not having fans in the seats would impact his team's home field advantage.
There's home field advantage with the fans. There's home field advantage that you don't travel and that you know the facility and where everything lays on that field. So you have that part of it. But I would tell you, we'd miss the fans if that's the direction it goes. I mean, we got the best fans in the NFL, so we'd miss the fans. But again, you know, when you're given these things, you have to go through and say, okay, this is what we've got, fellas. And you got to muster it up and go play and still do all that. So, you know, and then if nothing else, we know our fans are watching. Because the Kansas City fans don't miss a beat. You know, they'll make sure they know that they'll make sure that our players know that they're behind us.
There's still a home field advantage, right, for going out and not having to get on the plane, yeah. Not have to travel, not for have sure. to do all those things. And so that would still exist. But you know what? The Chiefs were 5-3 at home and 7-1 on the road. So they're going to be fine. Listen, great quarterbacks win home or road. I don't think that's going to be a big deal for the Chiefs in the long run. Let's take a break. Jesse Newell coming up next. Where is the situation? What's the timeline? He wrote a piece on the timeline for the Kansas versus the NCAA. We'll do that next here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
Flip right double X jet, 36 counter naked waglet, 7X quarter.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Yeah, how about that? Coming up on Memorial Day, the radio call of Super Bowl I. We don't think, last I heard, last meeting I was in, this has not been played since the Super Bowl. How cool is that?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. To hear Tom Hedrick and Jack Drees on the call. Oof, yep. Can't wait.
Yep. That is going to be a lot of fun. So Super Bowl I, Memorial Day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, the first championship, first NFL championship. AFL championships have been won, but first NFL championship by this franchise. That would be Super Bowl IV. This is Super Bowl I. So first they lost Super Bowl I, of course. I guess I should get my timeline right.
Correct? All the winnings. It's just easy to, you know, kind of.
It is. Crossover. It is. When you win a second Super
decade,
Bowl,
it
does boost you up there, right? And
absolutely.
if you get a third, then you start to really get rarefied air.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But listen for that. Super Bowl I, Memorial Day weekend, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHP. Let's turn our attention to some Kansas basketball. Jesse Newell, kind enough to give us some of his time for the Kansas City Star. He is the writer for the Kansas City Star, brought to you by our friends at Zero Res. That is right. Clean has never been more important than right now at Zero Res. It's the folks I use to clean our carpets. Call them at 816-425-3655. Find them online at ZeroResKC.com. That's ZeroResKC.com. $25 per room right now. Call for details and minimums. 816-425-3655. And I'm going to tell you, I pretty much was planning on replacing a room of carpet that my daughter had gotten sick on. I was like, no way is this coming back. That carpet is still there, and you couldn't find the spot if you had to, thanks to my friends at Zero Res. Jesse, welcome to the Sprint Guest Line. How are you, my friend?
Doing good. Didn't want to mention, Tom Hedrick, kind of a legend on these parts, too. He makes it to a Bill Self press conference once or twice a year, and always we get out of the way so he can have the first question. So I appreciate you guys will play that.
Yeah, you like that. That absolutely. Tom Hedrick, the great Tom Hedrick, and what a great career and what a great treasure for Kansas to have him on the faculty for so many years. And a great guy as well. So, yes, absolutely. To hear Tom Hedrick on that call will be fantastic. There's a younger generation that, you know, like you read his accomplishments, but you haven't heard his, you know, calls and all the things he did. So that will be really cool. I do agree. And where do we sit now? You wrote a great piece, I think, because I get a lot of questions, and I'm sure you did tenfold off anything I got, about, all right, how's this layout? What is the timeline for things? And you wrote a great piece there for the Kansas City Star with it. And I think one of the things that is interesting to me and that everybody gets to is the independent committee. right? This is now seen. Everybody thinks the NCAA hearing appeals. Well, hell no. Why would they overturn anything that they already put down, right? They're saying, well, yeah, we made a mistake. And no one expects that to ever happen. But now there's a feeling of hope that an independent committee will say, oh, okay, yeah, they did make a mistake. But they're not guaranteed to get in front of that, right, the way everybody thinks.
They're not guaranteed to, no. But I think if you hear about the process, and again, from the people I spoke to, you know, I actually talked to the vice president of hearing operations for the NCAA earlier this week. So if anybody's going to know about the process, Naima Stevenson-Starks is going to know, or going to know about this process better than anybody. But it seems like this case is kind of what it was built for, because we know in the past, and we've seen cases like this, where if the NCAA has allegations or findings against you, usually schools have kind of come forward and said, you're correct. You know, we believe that you're right. We're taking these steps to make sure it stops. You know, let's come together and come up with some sort of punishment. But lately, that's not been the case in some of these issues, which we've seen with Kansas, where one side digs in and then the school comes back and fires back basically and says, no, we don't believe any of that. We don't accept any of that. And so for those particular cases, I think that's what this was made for. And when I say this, it's this independent process that was first suggested by Condoleezza Rice's Commission on Basketball a couple years ago. So when the two sides kind of dig in, when the two sides kind of go eye to eye and really can't come together on any facts, I believe this is the sort of process that is usually what they're wanting this independent process to figure out. So it's not official yet. It's going to take probably 5 to 6 weeks based off precedent. If you look at the NC State case, there was their case had been, quote, suggested or recommended to this committee, and then about 5 weeks later was accepted in. So for Kansas, it's probably going to be a few more weeks until we know officially it's in there, but I would be surprised if this independent process does not decide the KU case just because of how these two sides have handled things so far.
And that's a very succinct way to put it. I'll go a step further. If they don't put this in front of that committee, why do they have it? Like, I'll go that far. Like, I'm with you. This is a contentious case. We talked about this the last time, that the NCAA seems to have taken personally, which I get it. I get each individual taking it personally. But as an institution, they should react, and I think, a little bit more above board. And they didn't. They fired back like it was personal for the institution. And so if this isn't the case that goes in front of an independent committee, then none should.
Yeah, I mean, this one seems like wheelhouse to me. And I agree with you. Not only that, KU, and again, this is in the story, people want to read it, but since this has been recommended to this new committee, Kansas now has 20 days to respond, to give its thoughts, like, hey, we think it should go there, hey, we don't think it should go there, all those sorts of things. The Committee on Infractions can do the same thing. The NCAA Enforcement can do the same thing. And obviously one of these parties, one of those three, suggested it go there. So one of those believes that this case should remain there. But you know, my thoughts on this is, for Kansas, I think they want it there. You mentioned earlier on kind of the previous process or how most cases play out. Usually it's the NCAA Enforcement. They do the investigating. They do the interviewing. They come up with the notice of allegations, and then they would normally be the ones that would come forward to the Committee on Infractions and say, hey, this is what we believe happened, this. With this new process, you have outside investigators who come in. They read all the material. They look at all the documents. They decide if there needs to be new investigative work done. And then they present that to a different group's subset of people that are not under the NCAA's umbrella. So, again, if you're outside looking in from Kansas's viewpoint, yeah, you want as many outsiders from the NCAA as possible to look at your case, rule this case, and perhaps get some fresh eyes on this case, not to mention most of the people that are on these different committees that are going to decide this case or be a part of this case are people with legal backgrounds rather than college sports administrative backgrounds. And if we've seen from these KU documents that have come out, a lot of the arguments that KU is making, a lot of this is kind of from a legal perspective. Hey, TJ Gasnola should not be a booster, because if he is, then this, and you're going down a slippery slope, that sort of stuff. So for Kansas, I think the benefits here potentially outweigh the risks. And I know a lot of people out there say, well, there's no chance for an appeal. Well, listen, KU doesn't want an NCAA appeal. You know, if they lose this case and get hammered, they want to take this to a higher court, which is still within their rights. So they don't want to go through a six-month process with the NCAA and wait for that and see if, oh, maybe one violation gets taken down. And I wrote about this last week, but usually those violations remain the same anyway, so you're just kind of wasting your time with that. They would want a different option anyway. So for Kansas, I see a lot of the potential benefits. It doesn't mean Kansas will come off scot-free. It doesn't mean it'll turn out better for them. It just means it's a different option, and getting outside that NCAA umbrella seems like the best of paths.
All right, and who picks and who is on the committee? Like, how is it decided? Who is it? A paid job? Is it a volunteer job? Is it? Do you know what goes into that?
Yeah, I've sort of read through these documents.
Right.
I joke with people that I read through these documents because I have to, and hopefully other people don't have to. But yes, these people are paid by the NCAA. A lot of them, and I mentioned this, so there's a lot of different committees. Just know that the review process or the independent process has a lot of different committees in it. So we're talking about different subsets of this. But one 5-person panel will be the final one to decide. They'll listen to the case. They'll hear it. They'll decide if violations were committed, and they will decide if there are punishments, and they will give those out. So that comes from a greater 15-person panel. And again, that's mostly made up of people in the legal profession that are getting paid by the NCAA to be a part of this board. Now, I mentioned this in my story as well, which is where Kansas probably doesn't feel quite as good about this matter, which is these people already have gone through orientation about NCAA bylaws. They have continuing education about the NCAA rulebook, those sorts of things. So these lawyers cannot come in, or people with legal backgrounds cannot come in and say, we think this NCAA rule is stupid, so we're going to make our own one. That's not what this is supposed to be. It's supposed to be people on the outside without conflicts of interest or previous conflicts of interest coming in and enforcing the NCAA bylaws. So that's the answer to, I think, most of the questions you had. Yes, they get paid by the NCAA. Yes, it's sort of like a volunteer basis. Yes, the 5 people that are going to decide Kansas's case come from a greater 15-person panel. And but no, those people do not get to decide we're going to change the NCAA rule book or do things differently because we think that this law or bylaw is stupid. They have to work within the means of the NCAA bylaws. And so, again, for Kansas, that might give you a little bit of pause, but it's still probably better than the other alternative out there, which is going the old way, which I think with that particular path, Kansas would probably get hammered pretty heavily.
Is there a feeling that this group was brought in to hammer people more or brought in – like what I'm curious is the people that are charged with being on the committee and make the decisions, do they get on there thinking like they're here to be the executioner? Or do they get on there thinking the NCAA has flaws and we're going to fix it?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I know there were some questions even in a previous article out there about even potential conflicts of interest with these outsiders that potentially had worked with the NCAA before in cases. So, you know, how much of an outsider are they if they had previous business relationships with the NCAA? A lot of these things I would love to answer, I just don't think we exactly know because there haven't been any cases under it yet.
Sure.
It's a completely new process. And so for Kansas, again, I think if you want to get a, quote, fair trial, this is your better option because you don't know how this is going to work. You know how the old process works, and you know that the NCAA enforcement has found 5 level 1 violation allegations against you. So you know the NCAA is sort of ready to stand firm on this case. You don't know exactly how these people are going to respond to it or how this will particularly play out. So I think it's a really good question. I don't think we have the answer to it, whether it's going to be these people are going to be more sided toward the schools or sided toward the NCAA. But, again, going back to the Condoleezza Rice committee or the Commission on College Basketball, the hope here was for less conflict of interest. The hope here is that schools could sort of get more of a fair shake. And I think the NCAA was pretty eager at the time to take into account any recommendations by Condoleezza Rice because, again, at the time they were embarrassed. They needed to have some sort of action to take those sorts of things seriously that were being unearthed and sort of laid bare to the world in the federal trial. So I think they sort of jumped on board with this pretty immediately, and potentially it could be good for the NCAA in the fact that if this case was ruled in the old way, you know, outsiders could say, well, look, yeah, the NCAA brought the case forward, and, of course, they hammered Kansas. You know, the judge was the jury, that sort of thing. Potentially, this could be good for the NCAA if this outside committee finds that Kansas had these violations and gives them a bunch of penalties, because then the NCAA would sort of have a little bit of ground to stand on to say, look, we believe this, but this outside committee, they looked at the facts. They could investigate what they wanted to. They looked at everything, and that's what they found as well. So it could be good for the NCAA, but obviously there is some risk there that that these outside people could look at this totally differently than the NCAA does. So I guess we'll all sit here and wait because right now we just don't know how it'll play out. But like I said, a bottom line level, I think that Kansas has to feel better about its chances with something new rather than something old where the old process would most times end up with a school getting very, very severe punishment.
I just purely opinion. We might need to push just a little bit here, Jed. Purely opinion. I expect this to work more like a courtroom. You know, to be more of a like a a burden of proof. Like the thing that the NCAA has always said, what people have always said is like, hey, it's an NCAA investigation. They just have to feel comfortable that you broke the rules. They don't have to have the smoking gun, right? You don't have to have, you know, the DNA and all that. You don't have to have all that. They just got to be like, listen, it walks like a duck, it quacks like a duck. It's a duck. You're on probation. This, I would think, because they're setting a precedent and starting new, is going to work more like a courtroom and would seemingly have to, this is my opinion, have to really nail it down more. Do you get that same impression?
I think that's one of the key questions, Saran. I think you're asking a really good question, because when I asked Naima Stevenson-Starks about this, she said it was pivotally important to talk about something I mentioned earlier, which is that these outside people still have to work within the framework of NCAA bylaws. However, you're right in that these people from the outside are not going to be married to the NCAA's original opinion as the NCAA is. And obviously, if you get to this legal stage that you are being considered for this committee, you're probably a person who thinks at a pretty high level and that would think pretty deeply about some of the things going on. So one of the questions, as I talked about earlier, was, you know, is TJ Gasnola a booster of Kansas? I mean, that's a pretty important distinction in the NCAA's case here. Potentially, that's something that this new committee would look at very strongly and decide, hey, is that something that the NCAA bylaws can get to? And if not, is this a case where Kansas can be punished? But again, to quote her, they cannot rewrite the rule book. They can't say the NCAA is stupid. They can't say that these bylaws are dumb. They can't believe, oh, this is something we don't want to believe in, so we're going to rule outside that. That's not the purpose of this thing. And again, these people are being paid by the NCAA, so they're supposed to work within the framework of what's being told of them. But I think you bring up a good point, and it still goes back to the fact that, and I bring up this analogy every time because I think it's important, the NCAA is like a homeowners association. So you're talking about the burden of proof there. You know, a homeowners association, if they see your grass is too high, you know, they don't need to know all the details. They can just say, hey, we're fining you because you agreed to these rules. And so that's still sort of where Kansas is at least at this point, that they agreed to these rules. And if the NCAA believes they didn't follow the rules, they don't have the burden of proof on them. But could that change, and could it change in the minds of people that are outside the process rather than inside the NCAA? I don't think we have that answer yet, but I still think the burden of proof here is going to be on Kansas to have some sort of legal argument to say that these violations did not take place.
Yeah, interesting analogy, since I am on our Homes Association and had the meeting last night, and no, we can't get anyone to mow their grass. But I get your point. I get your point. It's a good one. We're talking to Jesse Newell here from the Kansas City Star. All right, last thing, and that is the recruiting. Is there a chance? I just want to run this by you. Here's a theory of mine. Bill Self can get the top guys, and I think the top players, I've talked about this with Gary Parrish, that when guys are young, he said, you know, they go and they just grab whatever, the highest, shiniest, you know, best-ranked talent they can get. They get older, they start to go, listen, I don't want to deal with this, I don't want to deal with this, and they kind of hone in onto what their player looks like, and they target a little bit better. Is it possible that Bill Self, you know, being the ultimate at what he does, shifts gears, and maybe having those top-shelf, one-and-done type guys taken away from him, he actually finds the pieces that fit specifically what he wants to do, and they don't miss a beat with you know, talents down a notch, but it fits better. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it changes recruiting for them. I think it already has changed recruiting for them, and I think what you're saying could apply. But yet, having said that, you know, you look at how they've recruited here lately, and it's not crazy far off of what they've done before. You know, Bryce Thompson is top 20 recruit, McDonald's All-American. They brought him in the midst of all this stuff. Now, you can make the caveat that his dad played for Bill Self at Tulsa, which is absolutely the case, but still really, really good recruiting job. And then Zach Clements, the top 35 guy, just committed to Kansas. He sounds like he's been a lifelong Kansas fan. But again, I mean, the top 35 range, it's not really like you're setting your sights too much lower. But I agree with your point. And even to that extent, I mean, I think some of what you saw last year with KU's recruiting might have gone to that with a couple of guys that they pulled off. It looked more like guys that you get in the program, you redshirt, you develop them for a while. And potentially for Kansas, and again, I don't have any direct knowledge of this, but potentially for Kansas, it's guys you get them in the program. And if you know things could happen in the future, there could be a postseason ban, there could be some sort of punishment, that sort of thing. You get these guys in, you start to develop them, and you feel good about your chances of keeping them over the course of a few years. So, yes, I think it could change Kansas recruiting. It could be something, obviously, that they talk about and something that they deal with. But at the same time, you sort of have to be impressed that they continue to land top 20 and top 35 players the last 2 years, even with all this stuff that is kind of undecided and unknown off the basketball court.
Jesse Newell is with us from the Kansas City Star. Time for our Kansas City Orthopedic Institute Final Four. I will start you with this. Do we get 12 games in the college football season this year, yes or no?
I'm going to say no. Okay. I still don't think so, but we shall see. A lot of movement, the positive direction this week, it looked like.
Okay. Do we get a college basketball season, yes or no?
It changes so much. I'm going to say yes now, but that could be delayed too.
Yeah, I think what we get is like some kind of March to like June college basketball.
Yeah.
Where does Dotson go in the draft?
Man, it seems like his stock is going up. I'll say late first round, so let's go like 29th.
29th. All right. Yeah, we've seen. I think one of the things you guys had written had him going 13, I think, in one of them. So,
Dime Magazine had that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. And what do you grill best? We got a Memorial Day weekend. What do you grill best?
My grill went out a couple years ago. We haven't got replaced, so I'm really bad at it. But I can at least get the hot dogs in the microwave. That's a quarantine meal.
I love it. Hot dogs in the mic. I'm writing that down. That's a treasure right there, Jesse. You're always an honest man. We know that. Great stuff. Keep up the great work.
Jesse Newell, appreciate it. Of course, Seren Petro dropping there. We'll get him right back on. Jesse Newell, the Kansas City Star, one of the best in the business. We come back. Danny Klinkscale will join us for some Danny Unleashed.
Our Deli Fresh end of the hour question, sponsored by Good Sense, chosen by KC sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense, not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, from 1988 through 2003, the Utah Jazz had a .651 winning percentage. Where did that rank in the NBA during those 15 seasons? Brought to you by Good Sense.